From the Land-Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of January 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, Russia is set to ban the import of red meat from the United States. And potash manufacturers around the world have settled but not admitted to price-fixing allegations of several class-action lawsuits. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. At the end of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, as usual, for a Thursday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day lower. Nearby March contract in the soft red winter wheat on its close at $7.80.5, down 6.5. The July at $7.95.5, down 4.75. In Kansas City, the hard red finished the July, and this one is a settlement price, up 10.75 at $8.60.5. Back in Chicago on the closes and not the settlements, March futures $7.39.25, down 1. May corn at $7.41 unchanged in July. At $7.33, up a penny. September futures were down a half cent at $6.16.25, and December corn at $5.90.25, down 2.75. Next year's March contract, $6.02, a penny and a quarter lower for the day. March soybeans at $14.65, down 13.75 cents. May futures at $14.57.5, a dime lower. And July contract at $14.52, down 5.25. August at $14.22.5, 3.75 lower. SEPs down 5.25 at $13.70 in November, or the new crop soybeans at $13.18.5, down 14.25. January of next year at $13.31, down 5.25 cents for the day. Bean meal futures $7.20 lower at $4.25.50. Bean oil at $52.75, up 15. Live cattle futures finished the April at $132.80 on a settlement price, down 12.5 cents. The March feeders at $149.55 were up 45 cents for the day. And the lean hogs finished the April contract at $89.35 per 100 pounds. That was a dime higher as we closed out the session on a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day at $97.47, down just about 48 cents at this hour. RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, a penny and 0.2 cents lower at $3.02.5. And the ethanol at $2.46, 0.4 cents higher. And the spread for the day is at 56.5 cents between those two. That's a penny and 0.6 cents narrower than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $3.33.4, 0.1 cents lower for the day. The heating oil at $3.12.9, up a penny and 0.2 cents. Gold futures on the afternoon, $19.30 lower at $1,661.30. And the U.S. dollar now trading at 79.2. That's up 0.07. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Scattered snow showers, mostly cloudy, a high of 23 degrees. The wind chill between negative 1 and 4 degrees this afternoon. It should be breezy, of course. That west wind at 23 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 34. Chance of precipitation in the area this afternoon, 30%. Tonight, flurries before midnight, cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low of just 2 degrees. The wind chills between negative 6 and negative 16. It'll be blustery with a west-northwest wind at 16 to 22. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high near 17. Wind chill value still well below zero, minus 7 and minus 17 on a 9 to 15 mile an hour wind. And then snow on Friday evening with a low of 16 degrees. The wind chill values there above zero at 3 to 11. Chance of precipitation Friday night set at 80%. 50% chance of snow before noon on Saturday. Cloudy skies and a high of 31. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We should talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon, the last day of January, the 31st, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us from Mandeville, Louisiana, at CGB Enterprises is Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It is cold and going to get colder here. Let's get it out of the way. How's the weather there as you head into...
I did have to wear my fleece this morning, and I did have to scrape a little frost off the windshield, so we did get some of this colder weather, but that's all we've got, down into the low 30s.
Well, that's good. Glad to hear you're suffering just a bit, too. I'll tell you what, why don't you come up here next week and join us for some cold weather. We'll have you on hand, actually, on Tuesday and Wednesday next week in DeKalb, Sycamore, at the Farm Bureau building on Tuesday afternoon, and then at the Illinois Pork Expo on Wednesday. I'm sure looking forward to that.
I am, too, and I have looked at the weather forecast. It will be warmer by the time I get up there, so it looks like I'm going to miss the severe cold of the weekend.
I don't know whether you have been watching this through the day, and we'll get to it because there are plenty of things that we need to talk about, but there's been several announcements throughout this day as it's related to ethanol, and we need to work on the export market. But a couple of things that came late into the session, just before the end of the session, US EPA announced some proposed rules for RFS2. If I read them correctly, I don't think they have any impact on corn-based ethanol, and really it's just an adjustment for the lack of the ability to produce cellulosic ethanol. Maybe you know more than I do.
No, I that's the way I read it initially, is it really doesn't change the corn-based ethanol. I think it's the goals or the standards rise, I think, for the other forms of ethanol, but I think corn-based ethanol stays pretty steady in here.
Yeah, and we'll get to that, because the soy diesel rises to 1.12% or 1.28 billion gallons. I think that was actually set already. That one seems like a number I remember, and then there's... a couple of others. The cellulosic one was down to 0.008, so they took it down just slightly to adjust for the fact they can't produce it. And then the other thing that came out was on ethanol itself from EIA, or the Energy Information Administration, showing that last year and this year, production of ethanol was lower this year than it was last year, and that price of ethanol this year was lower than it was last year, kind of something we did not expect to see, I suppose.
Well, I think it's a reflection of the economy. Not as many people are working, so you don't have as many people burning fuel going back and forth to work. So I think what you're seeing here is a reduction in overall consumption. And then also, as people do upgrade their vehicles, and the auto industries, I think, had a couple good years in here, people are buying higher mileage cars. So, you know, I think that's what's hurting, at least in the short term. And then if you look at demographics, the number of miles people drive, you can see that the baby boomer crowd is over the cliff, basically having pretty much their kids raised. I got started late, so I'm still in there. But as you get your kids raised, you stop going to the soccer games and the baseball games and all that high school activity. So your miles per gallon or your driving starts going down, and I think we're seeing that demographic shift begin to take place as the aging baby boomer retires and doesn't travel as much. So that is kind of the problem I think we have in overall consumption. And then we do have a mini oil boom going on in the U.S. also, and then natural gas and whatever. So, you know, I think that's, you know, supportive to lower prices, but that's not necessarily what we want in the corn market. But that, I think, is all part of the equation where we just don't have the consumption that we would like to have.
All fundamental news, of course, are things that have an impact on the marketplace, and those are longer-term impacts. Tell me about the short-term and what you see in the corn market for the day.
Well, yesterday was one of those emotional rally days that just caught the bear by surprise, and we saw good new buying, good volume. So you get rising prices, rising volume, rising open interest is all signs of a bull market. It was primarily triggered, I think, by the persistent dry weather pattern that Argentina has experienced, and crop scouts making downward revisions in their production prospects. I'm not too sure how much has really been cut. I think Informa Economics is going to be out tomorrow sometime with their new South American estimates, so everybody's going to be watching those a little carefully. But that is the one that kind of triggered it, and we still basically, based upon the December 1st stocks numbers of both corn and soybeans, our disappearance and both those commodities are running very fast, and there is a need to slow down that demand, and I don't think the market feels that it's done it. We have seen some slowdown in ethanol production. Export sales in corn have been fairly dismal, but we're slowly but surely getting there, but it looks like it's coming out of exports and it's coming out of ethanol production. But I think there's still more to be done to get to a comfortable level in the ending stocks level, so I think that's still is propelling these markets to the upside.
So, well, who blinks again? So the livestock numbers are down. Ethanol production is down, which, by the way, means that we have fewer of their co-products to feed the livestock. And that might, I suppose, give us a little bump in what appears to be usage of just flat corn for livestock.
There could be flat corn, and then it could also help the soybean meal market out a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So there's I was talking to the distiller grain traders, and it's a complicated formula, and it's always a moving target which the livestock or the cattle guy, how he moves in which direction, depending upon what price. But, you slow the grind down, then you're going to increase the protein for soybean meal, probably increase the demand for actual corn. But I don't see any rationing that's going to take place in the livestock. I just think the numbers are so low, and they're rising with the grain prices. So the rationing is going to have to come out of export demand, and it's going to have to come out of ethanol grind.
Let me talk about that, or ask you at least a little question about that. So out of the ethanol grind, aren't we to the point where that if ethanol is truly just a component, and maybe it's not, that increases octane rate in gasoline across the country because it is in 10% of the supply in total, which is as much as it can be, or pretty much maximum, won't they just simply continue to use it if they can get it, so that might not change, and that would put all the pressure on the already dismal export market?
Well, we did see the margins on the ethanol grind did improve here over the last few days. But if you look at the weekly production rate that came out here yesterday, it does show that the grind's coming down. And if you would, there's reason to believe, depending upon how the grind unfolds, that you could be whacking the overall ethanol grind 200 million bushels. And see, when you look at the balance sheet, something's got to give way. I don't think you can get to a 600 million bushel carryout, and I don't think you can. I don't think the feed usage number is high enough yet. So there's still 400 million bushels to be rationed out of the equation, and I imagine we're going to see exports come down more. And I think you're gonna. I think the ethanol guys are gonna have to blink and cut back or slow down. So there's some rationing yet to be done in that area. Now you do have RINs now, which were basically worth a penny not too long ago or two. They're up to 30 cents now. So that's been a good penny stock to trade if you were long some RINs anyway.
Okay, so at Let's see, you must be down around 200 million bushels for ending stocks at this point, if you're going to try to get back to 600.
I think you need to probably get to closer to 800, and so, a lot of that depends upon how our planting season goes, whether or not we have an early season and early harvest and whatnot. But, I don't think you can get down to 600 million bushels. So, I think that's a pipe dream.
Yeah, so let's deal with the 400 million that you think we need to squeeze out of the marketplace yet. Is that 80 cents? To the upside?
I think, I mean, I don't know if I want to talk 80 cents yet, but
okay.
I can read the numbers up into the 8-somethings. I can read new highs in corn.
That's old crop, though, and not necessarily
that's old
new crop.
Crop corn. But if old crop goes that high, new crop corn is not going to sit still. But if you look at a monthly corn chart, and probably this will get everybody so bullish they won't sell corn forever.
Okay.
But basically this decline off of our August highs down here this January high, you could read that as kind of a bull flag formation. And basically you basically would want to add a couple dollars to the bottom of that, which was 678. So if you added a couple dollars to that, you could get it up into the 880 area or something like that. But that is just reading it from a technical point of view. I can't give you the fundamental reasons. Obviously, if we're going to go that high, that's probably more than rationing. That means that we're under the gun again trying to raise a big crop. It's too early to say, but there's clearly weather worries in the Western Corn Belt, and we may end up with planting delays in the Eastern Corn Belt before it's all over with. But in order to go to those kind of numbers, you would have to really scare the trade into thinking that the 2013 crop is coming down quickly, and you could really flip the switch on them, because most people, if you just look at what expectations are, high acres, something more normal on the yield, and there's big debate upon that, we could raise a real big crop. And if you would flip the switch on that mentality, you'd have a lot of shorts wanting to get out of that new crop short position pretty quickly.
Okay. Now talk just a bit about soybeans and what you see there.
Soybeans, as in corn, going to close out January here with a monthly reversal up. You could probably begin to argue that beans now are kind of getting in position here to try to make a decent recovery off of the decline that we had from the September high down to this January or December low, depending upon which way you want to use it. We need to kind of clear this 25% or 24% retracement level, which is this 1472 area. I think if we could muster some closes above that, then I think the gates then begin to open up for a quick move up into this 15.25, and then we'll kind of take one day at a time, depending upon what happens to South America. But beans have a strong tendency of doing 38%. And or 62% retracements, and a 38% retracement of that lead futures decline would take you back into the 1530s. A 62% retracement could take you back into the 1630s. So, at least this is a raw technical look at the market. Fundamentally, I don't think the numbers are there yet, but we don't know. I look at the dollar. The dollar looks to me like we're on the verge of a big collapse in the dollar, and then I think we're on the verge of a big collapse in bond market. So I do think there's some currency crisis or interest rate crisis coming down the road, and how that impacts overall commodities, we'll have to see when it happens.
It's always fun to talk with you. Look forward to having you here next week. And by the way, you'll be on Commodity Week next week too, not this week, but next week. And I have Michael Cordonier scheduled for that one, so we'll know more about South America from him.
Good.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Time to check the cash grain market. Let's bring Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, into our conversation this afternoon. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Todd?
Oh, you missed the front end of a really good conversation with Dan Zwicker. We have some big numbers that we were working on to the upside for corn. Dan tends to like to be a contrarian from time to time, and he was today. On the other hand, when you get to the cash grain market, you look at it and say, you can make quite a little bit of money, and we're talking mostly about old crop, but if old crop goes as high as he predicted or had an idea at least, new crop might run too. At this point, though, I'm thinking that you're saying if things are normal, there's a bunch of downside risk here.
Yeah, I mean, the way I'm looking at it and the way I most generally look at it, as you know, is from a profitability standpoint for producers. And most of the guys that I'm talking to feel pretty strongly that they've got some profitability in this area, close to $6. And, we're having a hard time getting above $5.90 and staying above it on this dece. But I think going into February, most guys are just hoping that they get something a little better than last year as far as an insurance price goes, and then, you know, that the thing doesn't just completely fall out of bed going into planting, because that certainly could happen on the fall corn, at least.
Now, earlier in the week, and you probably read this, Darrell Good wrote his weekly outlook and suggested that new crop corn prices simply had too much risk built into them, and the trade was thinking that too hard on drought conditions out west, and that the summer weather was really what made a crop, not weather out west when there's no crop in the ground.
Yeah, and you know, I did read that, and I would never argue with my mentor. But I will tell you this: whenever you look at the drought monitor map this year at this point in time compared to last year at this point in time, it definitely raises some eyebrows. And it's sometimes it's just really hard to break out of those ruts. And I think that the guys out west are very concerned for a good reason. I don't think that we're going into this year looking at maybe a chance for as much of a widespread drought as much of maybe a regional drought. But certainly there's concerns that are, should be there. How am I going to approach that going forward from a producer standpoint? Well, I think a guy still needs to do some risk management, because, if he's right, and we do get timely rains throughout the summer, and we have 99 million acres, you drop a 155 on 99 million acres, and prices of corn are going to be pretty low.
Low really fast. So is the management just crop insurance in the month of February, or is there something else that needs to be done?
Well, I definitely would like to see guys maybe just do a little hedging here and there. If they haven't done anything yet, they can always buy some puts or put some options plays on where they leave the upside open. There's several different things a guy can do at this stage, maybe doing nothing. What might work for some people, I think it's one of the more risky things that a producer can do. I think he needs to at least get some sort of risk management on.
What are your bids for the day?
Cash corn, 747, fall, 565. Cash beans, 1484, fall, 1298.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet.
It's National Brandy Alexander Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1893, the Coca-Cola trademark was recorded. 2 years later, it was sold in every state and territory in the U.S. In 1908, Carl von Voigt died, a German physiologist. His work on metabolism helped establish modern nutritional science. Von Voigt made the first determination of the amount of fat, protein, and carbohydrate broken down by the body, as well as founded the study of metabolic activity as a guide to disease. In 1930, Scotch tape was developed by Richard Drew of the 3M Company. In 1980, due to record high sugar prices, Coca-Cola began substituting high fructose corn syrup for half of the sucrose used in Coca-Cola. In 1990, the first McDonald's restaurant in Moscow, Russia was opened after 13 years of negotiations and an investment of $50 million. McDonald's built an entirely independent Russian organization with its own farms to supply potatoes for its French fries. In 1991, the average U.S. food prices were these. White bread was 71 cents. Grade A large eggs were $1.10 a dozen. Milk sold for $2.76 per gallon. Chicken was 89 cents a pound. And ground beef was $1.65 a pound. And in 2001, Germany announced plans to destroy 400,000 cattle due to mad cow disease. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the closing market report on a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, on the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's going to be cold here this evening and tomorrow and the next day. What do we see further out?
Well, further out, things are going to get milder and return to above normal by the end of the week. The coldest night will be tonight, where the temperatures are going to get down to those round digits in much of northern Illinois and the low single numbers in the southern portion of the state. And then the temperatures tomorrow will probably top off only in the teens, the mid to upper teens in central Illinois, and a few low teens when you get up north. Then the temperatures start to recover. They'll run below normal on Saturday and Sunday and Monday, and then on Tuesday we start to see the temperatures turn back to normal and be above normal by the end of the week. Precipitation doesn't seem to be much of a factor this week. There'll be some occasional episodes of snow showers, especially along the eastern shores of the Great Lakes, where the Arctic air is encountering that open water, and that will dump some snow on those shores. But elsewhere, we don't see amounts any more than maybe an inch or so of a dusting with these snow squalls in the Arctic air. And then we get back to normal, and we continue to go that way with this strange winter we've had, with temperatures just rolling down on one portion of the week or for a few weeks and then rolling back up.
What was your assessment of the rainfall precipitation that rolled across parts of the Midwest over this past few days and the impact it may or may not have had on different growing regions?
Well, it had practically no impact on the region that people are most concerned about, that is west of the Mississippi. Most of the precipitation was along the Mississippi and southeast of there and down into the lower Mississippi Valley and then up as far as the Ohio Valley. And that improved the moisture situation in the eastern Corn Belt states, and quite notably, but we still don't see that relief from the drought. We're looking at below normal moisture as the month ended over 90% for states like Kansas, Iowa, parts of Nebraska, Missouri, that whole western Corn Belt states. And this is going to be tough. We're going to need the rain somewhere along the line. And we don't see any evidence that it's coming anytime soon.
A quick 15 or 20 seconds. South America has been suffering. Do you see relief for them at all?
Yeah, they've been bouncing a little bit in Brazil, where they have had some localized useful showers in southern Brazil. The Argentine, though, has been mostly dry during this period. They did get a little rain a few weeks ago, but now they're back on the dry side again. So they're drier than they'd like to be, and they need some moisture there, too.
Thank you so much, Peter.
That's my pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Pete Levitt joining us here on the Closing Market Report for a Thursday afternoon. Have a great day. Stay warm. I'm Todd Gleason.